should begin this afternoon by apologizing to you for the hoarse voice that you'll be hearing. I don't know that mine's any better, but this is the best one that I have right now. Denver told me that he never did find any footprints on the top of his car when I was around. And that's because I'm too old to get in a car. Two things I want to do before we begin this afternoon. I'm going to be talking about trends in public education, which have been trending since the 1920s, and which are now in the 1990s and will, beyond the turn of the century, be bearing fruit in a system that has been taken away from the people who support it and turned over to humanists and atheists. And in that description, I will be making some rather strong statements about the school system or the school systems of the United States. But before I do that, I want to point out to you that when I speak of school systems and trends in school systems, I'm not talking about individual teachers. There are many, many, many fine school teachers in the world, and I have been privileged to have some of them. There are many, many fine school teachers who are devoted Christian people, and children are fortunate to be able to study under them. So what we're talking about today is not really the activity of any single school teacher or, so far as that's concerned, any single school system, such as the Marshall County system or the Wetzel County system or whatever system you may, district system like they have in Ohio. I'm not talking about any single one of those. But I'm talking about education as an entity in the United States. So, if I say some things that seem to you to be harsh, I want you to remember that I'm not talking about you personally if you're a school teacher. There are people here who are school teachers for whom I have the greatest respect and deepest love. Brother John Allender is a retired school teacher. Sister Elizabeth Robison is a retired school teacher. And I could go on and on. And some of the Christian school teachers that I have known through the years actually rose up against the kind of thing that I'm going to be talking about this afternoon. Several years ago, the United States Supreme Court outruled Bible reading in the public school system. They said they wanted to keep the church and the state separate. And in the community where I was living at that particular time, there was a lady who was a school teacher. She taught fifth grade, I don't know how many years. But at any rate, she kept right on opening her classes every morning like she always had, which meant that first there was a reading from the Bible, secondly there was the recitation of the Lord's Prayer from Matthew 6, and thirdly there was the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. Well, the principal found out about that. Principals in school sometimes are like the little boy said. He didn't mind going to school so badly. It was just the principal, the thing that upset him. The principal found out what she was doing. And he came in to her and he said, "Now you've got to stop this." Said, "This is against the law." Said, "The Supreme Court has said that we may not pray or read the scriptures in the public school system." And her reply to him went something like this: "That's not the Supreme Court. There's a higher one, and that's the one to whom I owe my allegiance. And as long as I teach in this school, I will have Bible reading, prayer, and pledge of allegiance. And if you don't like it, fire me." Well, she knew he couldn't do that because she'd been there longer than he had. But at any rate, he probably got his feathers ruffled and he went back to his office. And on the evening of the day she retired, she taught her last full day of school. One of the other teachers came around to her and said, "We want to have a little party for you in the gymnasium. So we've got some soft drinks and some coffee and some cake, and you know, we want to give you a little retirement party." And do you know how they opened that retirement party that night? The principal read the scriptures. They recited the Lord's Prayer. Pledged allegiance to the flag of the United States. I thank God. You know, the humanist would say, "Well, that woman isn't very intelligent." Well, if they think she isn't, let her get a hold of one of them. But after the colonial period in America, after this had begun to wane, and men began to see freedom and liberty for what they really are, they began to call for universal public education in the United States. And it took some time for this idea to catch on because of the fact that the populations of other countries from which our people in this country had come had always held that education belonged to the privileged few who belonged to what they considered to be the aristocracy. Not since the age of the Greeks had man taken time to provide education for women, and never in the history of the world was education made available to males and females on the same terms as it was in this country. America embarked on what I consider to be a great and noble project of educating every educable person in the country at the expense of the public. And for many years and for several generations, this noble endeavor was emphasized throughout our country, and the emphasis became so great that back in the late 40s and early 50s, it was reported in the textbooks at that time that the United States of America, even with all of the foreign influx, had reached 94% of literacy in our language. The old-fashioned schools, of course, as some of us remember, taught reading, writing, and arithmetic, and the students were taught to the tune of a hickory stick. Now, the reading and the writing and arithmetic was all right with me, but that hickory stick I did not like. And I'll tell you a reason for that. And Dad decided that he would cooperate with the school teacher. And if I got a whipping at school, I got another one when I got home with no questions asked. You talk about due process. There's none in that. Discipline was not lax in the schools. And as I said, there was cooperation between the home and the schools. The result of all of this was that the children, during their time in what we then called elementary school and then in high school, learned all of the basics, including speaking our language, that they needed to know to further educate themselves at college or in university. And America stretched herself toward the zenith as a society, as a nation of people, as a place where many millions of other people wanted to be. But all was not well with the system in those days, because things began to happen, and these things don't happen in a corner, nor do they happen in a moment in the twinkling of an eye, but things began to happen as early as the 1920s that would later weaken, and today we can see the weakened condition of public education in America. There was a would-be English clergyman by the name of Charles Darwin. And in 1859, Charles Darwin wrote a book which he entitled, quote, "On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection or the Preservation of the Favored Races in the Struggle of Life." I tried to read that book one time, but by the time I got through the title, my eyes were tired. And in this book, he claimed that man had sprung from primates, such as monkeys, for example, and that the Earth is a very, very old planet, having been formed in space through what he called gases. Now, to the best of my knowledge, in his book, he never told us where the gases in the space came from. And so he just began with what he wanted and went where he wanted. And in doing that, he decided six times that he would revise his book, and it was revised 6 different times because Charles Darwin died without ever having made a satisfactory explanation of evolution to himself. If you can't convince yourself, why should you try to convince others? This theory, which is really a hypothesis, meaning men call it a theory, but it's a guess, was brought to a head by the Scopes trial in 1925 in Dayton, Tennessee. At that time, it was urged by the evolutionists that since evolution was considered, at least by some, to be a viable alternative to creation, that it should be taught in the public schools on a par with creation. The camel had his nose in the tent. In our time, the very opposite's correct. Evolution is taught in the public school not as a theory, not as Charles Darwin's hopes or whatever they might have been, but it's taught in the public schools as a fact. And through the work of an organization called the ACLU, all references to religion are taken out of the public schools of our land. And the ACLU has been aided in this by some rather inane decisions by the United States Supreme Court, in which they have set forth the idea that the Constitution of the United States does not provide freedom of religion, but it provides freedom from religion. If John Scopes were living today, he wouldn't even recognize the length to which evolution has gone in molding the minds of American citizens. Someone mentioned in one of the lectures previous to this that if you can convince people that they came up out of slime, they don't mind being in it. And that's what we're being taught, or what our children and grandchildren are being taught today. But not only so. The public school system in America today is rife with violence. In every high school, particularly in those schools that are in large cities, there are rapes and murders that take place sometimes almost as often as every day in the halls of education. Incidentally, for those of you who do not know what the ACLU is, ACLU stands for the American Civil Liberties Union. It was started in the United States back in the 19-teens as a communist organization. I believe that the ACLU today is hell's legal arm in the courts of the United States, but you can take that for what it's worth. Back in the 1970s, there was a high school principal in the church for which I was preaching, and he came to me one day to bemoan the fact that things were changing. He said, "You don't know how anxious I am to retire next year because teaching is not what it used to be. Teaching is not fun anymore." And I said, "Well, to what do you attribute that?" And he said, "Well, the parents are afraid of their children. The Board of Education is afraid of the parents. The superintendent is afraid of the board. The principal is afraid of the superintendent. The teachers are afraid of the principal. And the children aren't afraid of anything." And there's a measure of wisdom and truth in that statement. When one adds to this the invasion of the public school system by humanists, when in the 1930s, John Dewey, who was a rank humanist, was named father of American education, you have added insult to injury. Incidentally, I've often wondered how John Dewey could be the father of American education when he was born 150 years after it was. But that's one of those things that Brother Apple was talking about earlier today. I think with a little study, just keeping up with your daily newspaper, one will begin to see the magnitude of the problem which is set before any parents who have children in the public school system or even grandchildren in that same system. Slowly but surely, the humanists have taken over the school systems of our nation until the net result of their labor is that 26% of all students graduating from high school in the United States are functionally illiterate. You know what that means? They can't read the TV guide. As a matter of fact, the state of California here 3 or 4 years ago enacted a practice that they would give their seniors in high school a reading test. And the reading test that they gave them was the TV guide, and if they couldn't read that, they made them repeat their last year in high school. That doesn't tell me nearly as much about the children as it does the system. As a result of John Dewey's becoming the father of American education, there has been developed in the school systems in such places as Virginia and California a new course in math called whole math. I want to read two or three things to you from a newspaper article which points out that this subject that's called whole math has nothing to do really with math. They don't care whether or not the kids ever work a problem. They don't care whether or not they arrive at the right answer. But the humanists who have put this whole math in the public school system, and there are several states who have adopted it and some are now beginning to abandon it, says what we expect to teach in whole math is just to have the right attitude. What they expect to teach in whole math is humanism. I mean, they ought to be truthful about it. And this writer goes on with some statistics from California and from Virginia, in which she pointed out that students fell in California after they stopped teaching traditional math and started teaching whole math. Students fell from the 86th percentile in math to the 58th. In other words, they went from succeeding to failing, so far as math was concerned. And there's some other things in that article that I could read, but we'll let it go for now and pass on to some other things. But I want to ask this question before I do. If having a right attitude, according to humanist concepts, is not shaping values, which they claim they never do, I'd like to know what is. Now, what can Christian parents and grandparents do to offset the horrible trends in American education? How can we fight these things? Some have opted to simply give up on the public system and establish private schools where the Bible and its principles can be taught and where the theories of evolution and humanism can be challenged. One of the problems on this matter is that evolutionists, under the guise of being Christians sometimes, and humanists under the guise of being Christians, will find their way somehow or another into administrative posts in these schools, and even in the private schools, they will begin to disseminate their doctrine. Now, we know this is true. We have seen it happen in our colleges. They are rapidly taking them away from us, and have taken a lot of. Those who refer to themselves among us today as postmodern theologians, which seems a bit silly to me. What is postmodern? Is that old again? Or what? After modern? Well, anyhow, you know who I'm talking about. They encourage this sort of thing and say that they're simply going to lay out, using evolution again as an example, the theories of evolution, and they are numerous, and creation, and let the student decide which one he wants to believe. Whether a school is a parochial school or a public school, there is one thing that all of us can do, and that is to be aware of what is being taught our children and grandchildren. Parental awareness is an absolute must when it comes to education on any level and in any place, including our own schools. Obviously, the public schools and many private colleges are not teaching and have not for some time taught that which children need to know. Children are no longer taught to read. The humanist attitude in the name of reading is that they be able to go through a book. Well, I've got a 3-year-old grandson sitting back there that can go through a book. As a matter of fact, he's got one he can read word for word. That's because he memorized it as his mother read it. Parents need to realize what is being taught in our school systems. And we need to be getting into the fray to remove humanists from the Board of Education and humanistic teachers from the system, if that's at all possible. When I began studying to be a teacher some years ago, which I never completed, I took 4 or 5 education classes and thought, I can't take 4 years of that. We were taught that there's only one reason in West Virginia for the dismissal of a public school teacher. And after he has tenure. And I remember the professor saying, that's for gross immorality. One of the students put up her hand and said, Dr. So-and-so, what is gross immorality? And he said, well, immorality is to commit adultery. I guess gross immorality is committed 144 times. And he said that with a straight face. Which said this to those of us who were students on that occasion, there is nothing by which a teacher can be removed from the public system once he or she has tenure. Because we don't commit adultery anymore, we have affairs. And so we need to be aware of what our children are being taught. It would not be out of order for a Christian mother to call her first grade student's teacher and say, what did you teach, Johnny, today? Don't we insist in the Bible study of the church that they bring home some papers so we can learn what they've been taught? And so one of the things that we're going to have to do in order to be on our toes, so to speak, against that which may not be stoppable is for us to take a militant interest in the public school system. Another thing that can be done to solidify the Christian home against godless education is for parents to opt for what is called homeschooling. In homeschooling, parents simply keep their children out of the public system, which may be the safest thing to do sometimes, and out of the private system, and they teach them at home what they want them to know, including the Bible. However, even in this, the state has asserted itself, or at least our state has, in that the parent doing the teaching must have an education equivalent to the public school teacher. The state also reserves the rights to test these children in order to ascertain whether or not they're being properly taught. That's like leaving the fox to guard the hen house, isn't it? So if the teaching parents do not have this education, which is required by West Virginia, the state can force you, by threat of fine or jail or both, to put your children into another system. Some time ago, I read a report on how much better children did in the homeschooling system than in the public system. And how much better they did on standardized tests, such as math, English, so on and so forth. And I searched and searched for the article for this paper, but I was unable to find it. But it is my opinion that homeschooling method is one of the best ways for a parent or for parents who can meet state standards in West Virginia to do the teaching at home. Recently, I read a column by Abigail Van Buren. Now, I want you to know that it is not my practice to read that kind of language, but the headlines above her column, as I leafed through the paper, sort of leaped out at me. Mrs. or Ms. or whatever she is, Van Buren, is a liberal Jew with whom I have one thing in common. We both belong to the human race. But in this column, and I brought a copy of it in case any of you would want to see it, she really praises the homeschooling. She says it gets good grades. And one of the things that she says she likes about homeschooling is that all of the children who wrote her letters, these letters are from kids, all of the children who wrote her letters were so, now listen to this word, literate. In other words, they knew how to use the language. They knew how to write a letter. They even knew who Dear Abby was. And so I think that it's a good method. As a matter of fact, there is one letter here that I'd like to share with you. It's from a girl by the name of Kelly in Escondido, California. She says, "Dear Abby, I'm 17 and entering my second year of college at the University of California, San Diego. I attended private schools through fifth grade and was homeschooled through middle school. Those years stand out in my mind as the most productive and educational and enlightening of my scholastic career. Later, because I felt I was missing out, I chose to attend a public high school and was appalled at the attitude of my peers and faculty. I was treated as an inferior because I had not received a public school education, and it was assumed that I was probably socially inept from being homeschooled. It has been my experience that in the public school settings, students are exposed to verbal abuse, to drugs, and to violence. Homeschool children can easily learn to relate to peers through extracurricular activities such as sports, music, and clubs. I wish I had been homeschooled throughout my high school years as well. I would have received a better education. I realize that homeschooling is not an option for everyone, but I firmly believe that I'm a well-adjusted person and a better person today because of it." So that's one thing we can do. Another thing that we can do is not only be aware of what is being taught, not only do the homeschooling, but we can do what a couple of other speakers have already talked about this week, and that is we can teach our children at home, even if they are in the public system. I can remember when our children were little, they'd come home and say, "Daddy, the teacher said so-and-so." And I'd say, "Well, the teacher is mistaken about that. This is the way it is." And of course, they had enough confidence in me to accept it. I remember one time when we were living here in Moundsville. We were having a gospel meeting here at the Hillview Church, and our older daughter, who never has been able to lose sleep well, because she was up late every night at the gospel meeting, went to sleep in school. And the teacher came back to her desk, and she took her by the arm and shook her and said, "Wake up." And Candy woke up. The teacher said, "Why are you so sleepy today?" And Candy said, "Because we've been having a gospel meeting every night." The teacher said, "You've been going to church every night?" And she said, "Yes." The teacher said, "Oh, you don't go to church on school nights." Now, some of you parents have bought into this. "You don't go to church on school nights because you need to be wide awake to get your education." And Candy, to her everlasting praise, so far as I'm concerned, reared back, looked the teacher square in the eye, and said, "My daddy said, nobody comes before Jesus." I hope I can remember that to my dying day. We need to take time to see that our children ask the right questions. We don't want to be like the woman about whom I read one time, who, a little boy about 4 years old, came in and said, "Mama, where did I come from?" She sat down with a child that age and attempted some means or another, I know not what, and discussed with him the fact of conception and birth and all of this. And it was noticeable toward the end of the discussion that the little child was getting bored. Finally, he looked up and said, "That's enough, Mama. Johnny down the street came from Des Moines. I just wondered where I came from." We need to teach our children to challenge their teachers, not to be rude, but to, in love and kindness, challenge them when they say something that doesn't seem right to them. Children have a right, and so do those of us who are adults, to demand that evolutionists prove the theory or quit teaching it. Recently, a California college professor told the students in his class who asked him to prove evolution, he said, "We don't have to prove it. We know it." How does one know what has never been proved? We need to take time to challenge teachers and school boards ourselves, letting both them and our children and grandchildren know that we want them to have an education that will count and not just some flippant study in whole math. Now, of course, this has to be done in the spirit of love, as Brother Hardiman pointed out so beautifully in his lesson the first hour this morning. But it needs to be done. Children have become abusive in our school system. Do you know that in the state of West Virginia, there is a teacher abuse law? If you are a teacher and a child curses you, for example, you can sue his parents for his verbal abuse. I know one teacher down in New Martinsville that had to do that in order to get the kid off his case. Now, the child was a fifth grader. My dad knew how to handle bad language at that age. And I'm sure that other parents know how also, if they care enough to do it. But one of the teachers told me that, down at New Martinsville, one of the teachers told me, said, "That kid's got the foulest mouth I ever heard on a human being." So he said, "I decided to have a talk with his mother. When we had talked 30 seconds, I knew why the kid had the foulest mouth I'd ever heard on a human being. He hears it at home all the time, so he doesn't know he isn't supposed to use it when he goes to school, does he?" And so he does use it. The teacher ends up suing the woman and her husband, who incidentally were living in two different residences, suing the woman and her husband because the child verbally abused him. I used to have a principal in grade school whose name was Clarence B. Smith. It never occurred to me to verbally abuse him. Because he had the answer to it. We need to take time, as I said, to challenge these teachers and to honestly find out what they're doing. But we also need to take time to do what Alexander Campbell called worship at home. Now, I'm not so sure I could make it out of bed every morning at 4 o'clock, as old Brother Campbell did. But surely by 7, we could get around to saying something to the children that is scriptural, that is righteous, that is holy, before they rush off into a world that's snapping at them from every angle. And surely in the evening, we could say something about God. We could read a verse of Scripture at the supper table or a chapter of Scripture, make a brief comment on it. If you know that your child is being taught evolution in school, then you could read Genesis 1 over and over and over, making a different comment each time you read. Then we not only need to take time to teach our children at home, but we need also to put tools in their hands. I'm beginning to yodel, aren't I? To put tools in their hands that with which they can teach themselves. For example, over in one of these rooms, I've forgotten which one it is now, but you can find it with no trouble, there is a magazine called Discovery. An excellent thing for children. Brother Bert Thomas, who is probably the strongest anti-evolutionist in the Brotherhood, and Brother Wayne Jackson edit and produce that paper, and it's beautiful. It's attractive to children, and it teaches them the truth. So you can use a tool like that. We can show our children by talking about some of the things, such as the laws of gravity and so on and so forth, that the Bible and true religion, or true science rather, never conflict, but the Bible and false science always will. And while we are teaching such things, we ought to so live before our children that they are assured that we are trying to be Christians in the fullest sense of the word. Let's not make the mistake of turning our children over to the school system 6 or 8 hours a day and then wonder why in their teen years they never obey the gospel, and in their 20s they never obey the gospel, and in their 30s they never obey the gospel. The reason, or at least one of the reasons for that, is that they have been taught something else is more important. Now again, By way of conclusion, I want to come to a word of caution. Not every school teacher, not every principal, not every superintendent in every school district or system in the United States is doing what I have talked about today. And these people deserve to be praised and supported in their efforts to fight a system in which they are partially at least taken captive. We need to let them know that we care and that we appreciate them, and that we appreciate what they're doing on behalf of our children by teaching them such things as evolution, by not teaching them such things as evolution. I remember when I was a freshman in high school, I took a course called biology. We called it bugology. But I had a teacher who was not a Christian, incidentally, but a deeply religious man. And on the very first day, he handed out the textbooks and took up our money. And he said, now for tomorrow, said, we're not going to stay long today. For tomorrow, you have the first chapter of this book read. And that night, we went home and read it, or at least most of us did. And it was pure evolution. The next day, he came back in and he said, let me see by a show of hands how many of you people believe what you read last night. Two or three students put their hands up. The class was about 30, 33, something like that. And the rest of us just sat there with our hands down. He said, well, I thank you for reading the chapter, and now we are going to pass on to important things. And we went to chapter 2, a study of frogs. And that's what we need in this world. More teachers like that. And they need to know that we love them and that we appreciate them. Now, you could probably think of a dozen things or more that a parent can do to help his child who is in the educational system somewhere in the United States. But in times like these, we cannot afford to be blind so far as our faith is concerned. And in whatever ways are right and necessary, and you notice I said right first, do what we can to solidify the home against ungodly education.